At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Listen and soak it in.
You're tapped into the Fantasy Pipeline with Dan and Mike from South Harmon, the show built to uncover tomorrow's dynasty stars today.
Sanders in a pocket. Oh, what a catch! Travis Hunter! Give him the Heisman now!
Number 4. On 3rd and 5. Howard will throw it. Underneath.
Oh, it's picked off! Down the sideline! Unbelievable touchdown! Penn State! Zion Tracy!
Toward the end zone! For the game! It is! Caught by Wister! Just like 1994!
All right, everyone, welcome into the first ever podcast for the Fantasy Pipeline. I am Dan Keenan, and this is Mike. You probably all know him, obviously, from being around the shitheads, and he is been doing that for how long? You been doing that for now, Mike?
Oh man, we're on year. We're going into year 5. Year 5.
It's been that long.
Year 5. That's crazy.
That is actually fucking crazy.
COVID was a wild time, my guy.
Both. You're telling me. That's nuts. So we decided after talking for a while that we love college football so much that we wanted to start up a podcast about talking about college football. So I think our main goals, at least for me, is trying to get more dynasty, more C2C content in the college football space. That's more geared to like best ball and the way we play NFL fantasy football. So I know the C2C guys are usually more lineup based, whereas Mike, as you know, is very big pushing on best ball formats. So so now that I've gotten used to the best ball format, we've more integrated that into college and just the way we like to play.
I love it, man. I love it. You guys, I have to be patient with my boy Dan here too. Like, he's a first timer. He's a virgin. Yeah. He's a virgin. All right. So, I'm a little more polished, even though in the scope of content game, I'm probably about as rough as it gets. I'm pretty rough around the fucking edges. We will swear on this show. It's not on the South Harmon Network without me being myself. But listen, you and I both share a giant passion for just football in general. Right. Minus probably like the UFL and the CFL, like in the Arena Football League. That's cool. Yeah. You know, I'm interested, but
we're good on that.
College football, NFL. And to your point, like once I really started diving into C2C and I'm like, holy shit, this is just like extra long term dynasty. It is what it is. And once you got best ball on the NFL side, thanks Sleeper, as much as I give them shit for not having college fantasy football yet, assholes. I do appreciate that they are the premier platform for me to play NFL fantasy football and best ball leagues on. And once I really started doing best ball leagues, it was like, wow, this is a game changer. Like, I don't have to put in 20, 30 fucking hours a week trying to figure out lineups all the time. Like, it always stressing, like, who's in my lineup? Did I forget one? I'm able to do more leagues and play in more leagues and make more trades and pick guys up off waivers and have more exposure to some of the guys that I'm very interested in.
And do a lot of the stuff that we find fun.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the stuff that we find fun, which, listen,
when it's stressing over your start sits every now and then, but for the most part, we love making trades. We want to make pickups. And all
it's
that.
Not fun. It's not fun to me at all. I fucking hate setting lineups with a passion because inevitably I'm going to be wrong. I'm going to be wrong and I'm going to be pissed and I'm going to have regrets. And you can talk about, well, it was the right process play. It still doesn't. I don't give a shit. The right process for me when I play fantasy football is, can I build a team? Like, I want to do the fun shit. And for me, that stems from playing Madden or playing college football, you know, the video games, like playing those games. And I don't really give a shit too much about the head-to-head thing, you know? Like, I will get my ass waxed by a good player, right? AJ will take me to fucking school and drop 70 on me. It is fun to play with your boys, but I have the most enjoyment with those kind of games, building teams, and I've always had it for, you know, since I was a little kid, the whole team-building aspect. So when we talk about fantasy, that's why I like Dynasty. I'm not a big redraft guy because I don't give a shit. I want to build a long-term team. I don't want just a one-year thing. Now we transition into college. It's been a natural transition where, hey, I'm already best ball on the NFL side. What about best ball on the college side? And to your point, the Campus Canton guys are the premier source for any kind of college fantasy, in my opinion. You know, I will always sing their praises. Dope-ass tools. Dope website. I mean, they're really, really good at what they do. The problem is, if I go and I listen to some of their stuff, and I'm like, I play nothing but best ball leagues. Like, they're giving me, you know, they're giving me advice that's based on lineup. And similar to the NFL, there are differences. There are massive differences that, some people don't understand when it comes to best ball versus lineup leagues. So, kind of the point of this podcast, you know, we're not gonna outdo the Campus Canton guys at college fantasy football. Right. But we need that dynamic. And the easiest way to get people into C2C leagues is, hey, there's almost no management that you have to do in season right here. We're going to do a C2C best ball league and you get to do all the fun shit. Right. You get to draft the players. You get to make the trades. You get to do waivers, which we're going to debate on this fucking show on how you set that up.
Yeah.
You get to do all that fun stuff, but you don't have to worry about, man, these college injury reports really suck. These college injury reports are dog shit.
Like the NFL does. That's one of the main problems. It's really hard because a lot of that info is like last second and it's almost impossible. FanTrax, what we use normally to play our leagues. They do have that auto sub feature type thing where it will sub somebody in if they don't play. But even still, it's a pain to figure all that out with all these last second injuries and everything. So that's why just the best ball concept for college is like a game changer, in my opinion.
It's massive too. And then you're also talking about a ridiculously large player pool. We look at NFL rosters and it's 53 men on 32 teams. And then you got some practice squad guys that you kind of pay attention to. But that is it.
Right.
We're talking, what are we now at D1? Because they keep adding.
It's 136. I think it was the last I heard. And what, do they keep like 70 or something like that?
I think they have 90-man rosters.
90-man? Dude, it's insane. It's insane.
I don't know what the scholarship limit is. I'll have to look that up.
I'm always forgetting those. But like, that's insane. That's so many players.
It's a lot of players.
Our player pool is now like 10x or whatever it is. I don't even know the X I have in front of my head, but that's insane. That's a real game changer. That also creates so much fun for us. Now we have like almost an unlimited pool. It's huge. So
it's massive.
It's a lot of fun.
They can have 105 scholarship players on a team. 105.
Yeah.
So. Now, granted, we're not playing. I mean, there are some degens who play college IDP, okay, we're not that crazy, right? No. So eliminate, you know, special teams, but still, still, man, come on, that's a lot of people.
A lot of people.
there's a lot of times so far in playing C2C, I'm like, I have no idea who the fuck this guy is, but goddamn, is he scoring points.
I mean, that's the end of the day. That's all that matters to us. So that's really fun.
So what are we discussing tonight for episode one? I know you kind of brought it up.
I really wanted to stick to just talking about mostly concepts on how we play the game, our roster limits, what we prefer. Fab, as you know, we've talked about this off air before. That's gonna be one of our big discussions tonight. Just all that basic housekeeping stuff on how we play the game and how we come about it and our version of what we play C2C. So
perfect, man.
Stick with that. So first up, I think we should start talking about our roster sizes. What's your preferred limit? Like how many people do you like in your roster? Like including your bench and all that stuff.
So, I mean, this is always a point of contention for everybody. All right. Dynasty Barry, if you're listening to this one, he knows he likes deeper the better, man. Like, he likes them deep strokes. And I'm with him. Mm-hmm. I think to some extent, like I do want a waiver aspect a little bit. I want people to have to make trades if they need to, like, go out and I want to make this team better, right? I want that incentive. So it's kind of a happy medium. So far, I'm settling somewhere between like 45 and 60 feels like a good spot for me. Like it really does, which I get you get a lot of exposure to a lot of good players. I think probably one of the most interesting things is for college basketball, it's much different than how you picture NFL basketball. Right. And all the strategies that we have, because if I told you we're playing in a normal 12 team super flex dynasty league on the NFL side, and we're going to start, you know, somewhere between 10 and 13 players, right, total, you already have an idea of a value of, you know, how important the super flex position is going to be, how important the quarterback is going to be, how important the Jamar Chases of the world is going to be. When it comes to the college game, I think some of it is a lot of just unknown that we don't really understand it too. But also my experience with it is, listen, if I just start one quarterback and one super flex spot in a college best ball, almost like the quarterbacks don't really matter. Like they don't, because there's so many quarterbacks out there. I mean, we talked about how many Division I teams there are, how many scholarship players are on a team. And then they're all facing different levels of competition, right? Like, right.
I mean, yeah,
that's why the MAC is so fun to watch on like a fucking Tuesday, right? Because it's like, we don't know if there's going to be any defense. This game might end 85 to 84. You know, it might be a basketball score at the end of the day. So a lot of these quarterbacks that you're like, man, I could just go get this dude off of waivers, right? So I think your total roster size needs to be determined also by how many players you're actually going to start and how many spots you're going to do it. So the last one that I put together, we went with 55 roster spots, but we're also starting up to four quarterbacks, right? We're starting enough quarterbacks where it's like, you're going to need some dudes, right? You're not just going to be able to go to the waiver wire every single week and find, you know, Northern Illinois quarterback who just dropped a 40 burger last week and then plays the biggest cupcake in the MAC this week and just cycle them in. So I think it's a fine give and take between like what you really want to do with your roster size, which I don't think there's a right or wrong. I think it's a preference thing, but you just really got to feel it out. And it kind of sucks to say, but you got to feel it out through trial and error, right? You got to have some leagues set up where you go, fuck, this was dog shit. Like, I'll never set a league up like this ever again.
Right. Which I'm actually pulling up my first one that I did with best ball. And we were at 45. So started with 45.
Yep.
The next one I went to was 55. I instantly, the next one, I pushed it up 10. And then now the newest one with Dynasty, Barry, actually, I talked him into 60. So
perfect.
60. I love 60. I think 60, I mean, I was liking 55, but I still felt like, man, I just need a little bit more room. And then, but I don't want to go too much more, but like 60s, I feel like it's going to be a nice, happy, a really perfect medium.
How many players, like positions, are getting started?
That's what we're going over next. So the starting positions, like I like at least three starting QBs and one super flex. So you're technically usually starting four every single week. And at a 12-team league, Like that's a decent amount of quarterbacks getting chunked off there. So
that's a lot of quarterbacks. That's a lot of quarterbacks. How many for the skill positions? So what are we looking at total for total starters on a 60-man rostered league?
So we'll just go straight over all of them. So then, so three quarterbacks in the super flex for the quarterbacks, and then four running backs I usually start.
We're up to eight. This is Iowa math right here.
And look at that.
That's 12.
Yep, two tight ends.
14.
14, and then four flex.
Okay, so starting 18.
Starting 18. That's usually what I like right around there. And that's at least that. If you want to push one more to each, honestly, you'd probably be fine. Like there's so many players available that it, especially in a best ball league, you're fine. Like you're not going to run out of players. That's for sure.
It sounds crazy.
It does. It sounds crazy and almost overwhelming at first, but then once the season starts and you start seeing these dudes scoring, you're like, oh man,
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
There's going to be people on the waiver wire, I promise. So
I think, too, like when people just hear it from a traditional NFL league, you're like, start 16, you guys are fucking animals. But here's one of the things, too, I just want to mention about C2C leagues in general, right? You're fighting this internal battle, right? Mm-hmm. You want to be competitive and win the college side because there is money, usually money, there should be money involved for winning the college.
Talk about that real fast. Usually we have split pots.
Yes.
So it's usually, I like equal pots on either side. So
the first one I set up was a 60-40 split. And I said, this last one, I said, fuck it. We're putting emphasis on both of them.
100%.
We're putting emphasis on both of them. So my pots are from here on out are going to be 50-50, right? Yep. Right. To give people an incentive to actually try on the college side. But you're still going to fight this internal battle with yourself, with your league mates. You're balancing out production on the college side because you can get production dirt cheap on the college side. And I'm telling you, a lot of these guys have absolutely zero NFL prospects. Like, zero.
Zero.
They fucking know it, too. Like, I don't want to shit on...
145 pounds?
Yeah.
He ain't going nowhere.
I don't want to shit on kids' hopes and dreams.
Balling on a Tuesday.
Yes. I don't want to shit on kids' hopes and dreams. But there are quarterbacks out there in the C2C formats that will put up 40 or 50 points on a weekly basis. And you look at that guy play and you're like, wow, he did score a lot of college fantasy points, but you put on film for 5 minutes and you're like, this dude couldn't even make a practice squad.
Right.
That's how fucking bad it is.
Right.
Like there are some, think of like Navy's quarterbacks, Army's quarterback. Nobody gives a shit. These dudes aren't playing in the NFL at the next level at the quarterback position. Okay. It's just not happening. The
football. They're just running. Well, guess what? They're putting up 50.
Yeah, you have to balance out. Okay, I do need players who are going to have some sort of NFL future because I want to build up that. This is my only pipeline to the NFL. This is my only pipeline, my only avenue to make my NFL side good, right? This is it. But in the same sense, there's money on the line. So I do want some players who are going to score fantasy points. Like I want some players. So when you say like start 16 or start 18 or whatever the fuck it is, you're like, wow, that's nuts. Like all the studs are really devalued. Well, they're already devalued anyways, because most of the guys who are going to score the most fantasy points aren't necessarily the best for NFL prospects. So I like the deep ones. All right. I'm like Dynasty Barry. I like deep starting rosters. I like deep benches, the whole works. I want to be able to cover the whole basis where I can have a nice mix of this is what's going to get me through the next 4 to 5 years on the NFL side. But also I got enough room. I have enough avenues and enough spots to be able to start these Maxion guys, right? To be able to start the, what is it now? The Pac-2, Pac-2 guys, right? This is what we're down to. Like I want to be able to get some exposure to some you know, future right. insurance salesmen that are going to drop a 30 or 40 burger at the wide receiver position.
Yeah, I mean, I need to start the Charlotte wide receiver who just balled out last week.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, he needs to be some sort of value. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's tough. So overall, I'm in full agreement with you. Deep starting benches or deep starting rosters, deep benches, somewhere in between like 50 and 60, maybe I want to go more too at some point, right. because it seems every year in the supplemental drafts that we do, it's like, I was just telling you before we got it, how the fuck is this guy making it into a supplemental draft? Like, how is he not on anybody's roster last year? It's not like he's a true freshman coming in. Like, this guy balled the fuck out last year, and nobody had him on a – what the fuck is going on here?
I mean, we're about to talk about it in a second about waivers, and you play a little bit more limited waivers than I usually play. I play unlimited, and then we still run into that same situation where you're like, dude, how's this guy not a roster? And I still – I mean, we've made it through our whole supplemental drafts, and nobody ever runs out of players on who to pick. It works just fine, even with an unlimited type waiver as well. You still find gems all over the place.
Yeah.
And then especially nowadays with the transfer portal, the way it is, I mean, you got guys moving up, moving down, whatever. And next thing you know, like this dude who did nothing last year, who was playing on Georgia, he moved down to the MAC, and now he's been dominating for the past few weeks. Now he's got some value. So it with the transfer portal, it's a game changer as well.
It is massive, right? Yeah. Some transfer portal news that I just heard today. For anybody who kind of really follows college football, I guess you don't really have to be a super, like, nerd about college football, but Malachi Nelson was a number one ranked quarterback coming out a couple years ago, 5-star. I mean, he's in the same class as Arch Manning, and for fuck's sake, he was ranked higher than for Christ's sakes. And now we're sitting here. Malachi Nelson went to USC, didn't really get to play. Left USC, went to Boise State. Somehow got beat out by Maddox Madsen, who's god awful and terrible. So you're like, what the fuck is wrong with Malachi? But now he's at UTEP.
Yeah, UTEP.
Like UTEP, but and he's starting at UTEP, and you're like, hey, if there was an opportunity for Malachi Nelson in C2C leagues, this is it, man. Welcome to UTEP.
I mean, that value's back. You're selling now.
Back up, baby. I want you to put the word out. We back.
Oh my goodness. That's funny. So next thing up, waivers. You and I, man, we differ. So you prefer limited pickups. Usually your leagues are what, around 10 fab dollars a season?
So the first time that I did it, I think I had 5 pickups total for the entire year I did.
Yep.
This last time that I set up a league, which I'm gonna champion for because I love it. I love it because it allows me to get people into a C2C league without overwhelming them, without stressing them out to the max, without them having to worry about checking fan tracks all the fucking time. They can do it at their leisure. So I'm putting the cart before the horse here. This is the reason why I fight so avidly for it, is because C2C is still a relatively niche thing. Like, dynasty football in its own sense is a niche thing.
Yeah.
Now you're going like super dynasty with the C2C.
In the last few years, so we're becoming
less. It's blowing up. And college football is getting bigger, but it's still niche. I mean, like if I go to work and I, you know, talk to a random coworker about fantasy football, they know what the fuck I'm talking about. They have an idea, even if they don't play. They have an idea. If I talk to them about a campus to can league, they're like, "What the fuck are you talking about?
I mean, just college fantasy and football in general. I mean, not many people know you can even play it.
So my preference and the one that I like really, really right now is every player costs at least $1, at least $1 every time you want to do a pickup, and every manager gets $10 total for the year. So technically, you could spend all $10 on the super hot waiver pickup after week one if that's what you really wanted to. Like, I got fucking nobody picked him up during the supplemental draft.
Right.
This fucking freshman just went out there that we didn't even know about and just, you know, put 200 yards on fucking Ohio State. Like, holy shit. Right. This kid's going to be special. If you want to drop all 10 bucks, you can. Most people are going to look at it going like, I got 10 pickups for the year. Right. Now, the great thing about it, and for me setting it as fab, is now it becomes a currency to also trade. Right, because there's going to be some people that are like, I don't know shit about picking anybody up on the college side, or I really don't have an interest in competing on the college side. I'm really just trying to build an NFL pipeline and trying to win the dynasty, the NFL side. It becomes a currency for anybody who's actually trying to compete on the college side now. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, I want to trade for your $10 in FAB. Like, it becomes pretty fucking important. But at the same sense, I want that ability to pick up enough players throughout the season where people can make moves and improve their team or spot start a quarterback or a running back or whatever it is. But in the same sense, I don't want people to have to be overwhelmed where they feel like, I got to get there, you know, fucking Monday morning, and I got to have my waiver claim in, and I'm ready to just outbid everybody else to go get whatever the hot name is, and I'm just going to cycle through players every fucking week, man. I'm going from Mac quarterback to Mac quarterback to Mac quarterback. Like, I want some longevity. I want players that you draft in the supplemental draft or in the startup draft to really feel like, oh man, like, I do need a quarterback this week, but I can't give up on, you know, Luke Cromanhook because of his pedigree. And, you know, now he's playing for my favorite team, Mississippi State or whatever the fuck it is. Right.
Right.
I want you to have to make those tough decisions instead of just being so willy-nilly about, like, man, I could go ahead and drop him this week, pick up this Mac quarterback, start him, and then pick Luke back up the following week, and then, you know, rinse and repeat down the road. I want you to have to carry some players on your team where it's like, they're not doing shit for me, but I'm also trying to build for the future. I'm trying to look for the long term. When this guy's a sophomore, or when this guy comes back from injury, or hey, maybe, like you said, maybe in the transfer portal, maybe he's leaving this team and going to greener pastures next year, right? Like, I want those kind of players that are stuck at the end of your bench that you don't want to get rid of. Like, almost like a default taxi for a college C2C league.
Right. So, while I agree, I do differ. I understand, like, that idea and that concept of, like, trying to limit it, make it easier for people. My issue, though, is I feel like it's almost the opposite when you're team building. I feel like college is really difficult. Number one, knowing who these freshmen coming in are, like, it's when there's not many of us looking at high school people. We're more reliant on Campus of Canton's data, just the normal 247's data or whatever. So, I mean, you can go if you want to go really in depth and go look at it. But for a newer player, that's overwhelming. You don't know all the players in general, then the freshmen coming in out of high school, and it's a lot. So I feel like from me starting, it was tough in the beginning, and I feel like the easiest thing I could do that I knew from fantasy football, just from playing normally, is to go to the waiver wire and pick up dudes who nobody wants. You know what I mean? I can go in. It's fairly easy in Fantrax to what's it called? To filter it. You can filter it out by, like, when I started, I would filter it out by freshman. I'd be looking for who's the freshman, and then I'd look at, like, weights and stuff like that and figure out who I liked out of the pickups available. And then I'd pick them up or whatever. And then if it's limited team you with only 10 pickups like a year, that's really hard to rebuild a roster with scrubs that nobody really cared about that maybe you hit. And guess what? I hit on Ollie Gordon. I hit on DJ Giddens from that, just from going playing with the C2C guys in their home league or whatever. Not their home league. Their C2C versus NIL people. I was in that league or whatever, and I hit on guys like Ollie Gordon and DJ Giddens who they hadn't picked up because nobody wanted him. They were nobodies at the time. And just from going in there and looking at freshmen and, like, things I want, heights and weights and good yards per carry and this and that. And I since they had a $1 bid, so I would spend a dollar, but I was more willing to spend that dollar out of more of an unlimited budget. They didn't have an unlimited budget, but it was a lot bigger than $10. So it was easy to rebuild that way versus just being so limited on 10 pickups. That's kind of almost terrifying. Like, man, do I really go in on this guy? You know what I mean? And so I feel like you can really get orphans really quickly in a C2C league with limited pickups. Like, if somebody just bombs their team, doesn't see a path forward on how to rebuild that team, keeps missing on their freshmen, they're going to get very discouraged very quickly. But us as fantasy players, I feel it's a lot easier to grind the waiver wire, especially with you don't feel like you're getting punished with $0 bids or a $1 bid. out of a pretty big budget, it's more, it's less intimidating, I feel, and it's a lot easier to rebuild. So I almost feel like the argument that it's easier for newer players is almost, yeah, it could be easier at first because it's a lot overwhelming, but then it could be very, very difficult very quickly for them to actually be competitive. So
I agree with you on those points. Like, I do agree with you on those points. However, counterpoint to your counterpoint, right? Like, I'm playing the Uno reverse card here.
I like it.
When we start talking about starting 16, 18, we're talking about 55, 60, maybe potentially 70-man rosters. I think a lot of that goes out the window because we're going to roster so many of these guys. We're going to have so many opportunities to have those hits, right? Where 10 feels good. I'm fully with you, though, because I have seen in some of the earlier C2C leagues that we do, if you're talking 40-man or 45-man rosters, maybe start 11, start 12, you know, and you got your, you know, normal 10 or 12-round supplemental draft, that's all you got to work with, you can have some pretty dog shit teams if you have limited pickups. Like, you can have some really dog shit teams. I'll say, like, in these deeper ones, and the deeper that we keep going and the more that we're doing supplemental picks and bigger drafts, you know, every single year, which I don't want to put the cart before the horse for a lot of people who may just be tuning into this first time. Supplemental draft is essentially where we're taking anybody that didn't get picked up last year and all the incoming freshmen. So kind of think of it like the college rookie draft, right?
Right.
Except for it is the rookie draft on fucking steroids.
Yeah.
And the other thing about the college rookie draft is you kind of, you mentioned it with these freshmen. We have an idea, you know, based on recruit ranking.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
And, like, where they're going, if these guys are good, like, who the good ones are. But you really don't.
You watch these 5-stars dive bomb so quick.
You really fucking don't.
He was top of the world. He is worth zero. It's been, what, 2 years?
So the deeper we go and the deeper the supplemental drafts become, right, then the more you roster, the more you're going to find that somebody in the round 15 of the supplemental draft just got a guy who's going to be a future first-round NFL draft pick. Like, you're like, how the fuck did nobody else pick this guy up? Like, how did nobody take him for 15 rounds?
It's definitely a lot easier, I mean, because a lot of more of the pool is gone. But also, too, if you run into those rosters that just, man, they missed on everyone. You know what I mean? And it is so hard to rebuild with, like, 10 pickups and then a supplemental draft every single year. Like, you have to wait basically a whole entire year to maybe hit on your supplemental picks and then get another 10 more picks.
So let's talk about the supplemental part then, because I think these go hand in hand.
I agree.
How deep should the supplemental draft be?
I think I'm playing around like 15 rounds at the most. They're really not that long. I don't know. What do you usually play in?
Most of them have been 15, but I've been really thinking about this with the limited pickups, right? And the deeper rosters. We might be going to 20 here pretty soon. Like
would do limited pickups like you, I would 1,000%.
I think we go to 20. Like,
because you're limiting them so much throughout the year, you almost have to. But yeah, I mean, also, too, you're cutting people off your roster, so that kind of kills you as well. So you might not have people willing to cut 20 people. So it's tough. And it's so hard because of all the changeover. And like we already talked about, is transfer portal. So it's really hard to know who to keep. And you got guys who are like, this dude just balled out for, I don't know, it's Jacksonville State. And then now they're moving to LSU, which sounds cool. In theory, oh, sweet, they moved up to a big school. Well, guess what? He was a superstar before, and he was scoring you a ton of points. Now he's on LSU. I mean, sometimes it works out. Usually they're bums. Yeah, at that point. They moved up too far. They jumped too high. But it's also terrifying. Do you keep them, or do you now move on? You know what I mean? So it's really tough to know who to keep nowadays, especially with the transfer portal. It's also really cool. It makes rebuilding in the college side super easy. It's almost like redraft at this point because of the transfer portal. It's you can compete damn near every single year if you have an unlimited budget, which is fun because you could start rebuilding, start moving things around, and the way the transfers are moving back and forth as well, that good team may not be so good no more.
I'm looking at just a random league that I'm in, mm-hmm. you know, not one that I commission. 15-round supplemental draft. And just to like emphasize my point about like you are able to turn dog shit teams around.
Yeah.
With a deep enough supplemental draft on your own. And sometimes it isn't because you're good, right? Like these are just skill picks. Because I'm talking a lot of people, you know, may not know like some of these names, but the very last pick in a supplemental draft that I'm looking at right now, 15-12, Jordan Lyle out of Miami. Mm-hmm. Right? Like you're like, okay. Fuck yeah, like, like he's got some sex appeal now heading into this year.
He's gonna meet the value now for sure.
Right. Some of these other ones are pretty great too. Like I took Elijah Surratt out of Indiana in the 14th fucking round. You know, like that guy turned out all right.
He says he's had pretty good years, past like 2 years. So,
you know, Josh Hoover was an 11th round pick for me. There was one other one that really stood out to me. Where the hell was it? Something stupid. Oh, CJ Carr starting now for Notre Dame, right? Somebody got him in the 12th round, right? Like, they got Notre Dame starting quarterback, young guy too, in the 12th round. And this is last year's supplemental draft, right? Like, you go look at the top, and you're like, oh no, that one didn't work out so well. You know, like somebody took Phil Moffa 102. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like Phil fucking Moffa 102.
I mean, you can literally hit the best player in the draft, the last pick, and you can hit the worst player in the draft in the first pick.
This is what hard. I get, man. Like, like I took Abu Sama in the 4th round. I'm an Iowa guy. Hey, I took a Cyclone. I took a chance on a fucking Cyclone in the 4th round. Against your religion. And he can't even beat out some white running back named Hansen, for fuck's sake. Right there. This is what I'm saying. Like, a lot of times we don't know shit. We just really don't know shit. So I think to your point, if you're not going to do deep rosters, or you're not doing deep starting lineups, and you're not doing like a super deep supplemental draft, the waivers almost have to be universally across the board, unlimited, and let people do what they want and pick guys up and fuck almost a free for all. Okay, right. Like allow people to do it. But I think if you properly set your league up with a deep supplemental draft, if you set it up with deep rosters where we're going to roster a metric fuck ton of guys, I think that is for me anyways, probably the best of both worlds where I don't have to overwhelm new people with having to check fan tracks all the time or shit, I forgot fan tracks even existed there for a minute. Right, because if we play, I play 60 some fucking leagues on Sleeper. Sometimes you forget that there's other platforms. Right, this is why I hate when coworkers or family members are like, "Hey, come join my home league." You know, I want to do it on ESPN. It's like I'm inevitably gonna forget to open that fucking thing on a Sunday, or I'm gonna forget to open it during waivers, and like all of a sudden I'm just discouraged because it's like, fuck, man, like I didn't even have a chance to get that guy because I completely forgot we were doing shit in this league.
Which one thing we didn't talk about, backing up a little bit with our waivers, I found, even though I do pretty much what we call unlimited, because I have a $100 budget in all my leagues, and I do a $0 bids, so it's allowed. So it's basically unlimited, but I really only run them once a week. So I run at 6 p.m. on Tuesdays. It's just before like the MAC games start later in the season, so. It gives me time from like, because we all play the NFL, so you watch your Sundays, you have your Monday night football, whatever, and then when I'm setting my waivers during the day for my NFL stuff, I jump over and set them during the day for my college as well. It runs at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, one and done. I don't do daily waivers like I do for NFL, but I don't do the daily for college. I feel like since it is unlimited, once a week seems fine. I mean, you have 60 people on your roster. It's big. It's deep. I allow people to pick up whoever they want that one time, but it's one time a week. So I feel like that's a good mediation. It's not every single day you're picking them in your
chair. Right.
This guy just played. He's now he's off your roster. That also, too, that I think that since they play every single day of the week, pretty much, that'd just be too crazy. If you're starting Tuesday and Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I mean, that's insane. So I think one day a week, unlimited, let people pick up who they want once a week, and then it's done. So I think it's at least a little bit easier to manage that way as well, mentally. Remembering to do your NFL waivers, your college waivers on Tuesdays, and you're done.
And on the flip side of the coin, if you limit waivers like I do, right? I leave that shit open 7 days a week, man.
Right. Like, that's true. That's true. Unless they've
played and they're locked, you know, like you correct. Just follow whatever the league rules are on when you can pick people up. But if you're sitting on the shitter on a Tuesday morning at work and you're like, all right, I want to go get this guy. Well, you know, if you go and put in your $1 bid for him, next time waivers run, next morning, right? You can go check and see if anybody else was sitting on the shitter and wanted that guy too.
wanted to blow that $1.
Yeah, wanted to blow that $1.
Which too, you talked about the $10 and that the being able to spend it and be able to trade it. I feel like the same thing happens in the regular in another league. Like if it's $100, if it's $1,000. It's all the same concept. It's just different numbers. You know what I mean? $1 is 10% of your budget. $10 is 10% of your budget. You're going to spend it the same. I found that like people blow their budget just as quickly with a $100 budget as they would probably blow it with a $10 budget. If it's that guy that's super valuable that he hit super huge for the first week, I've watched dudes put in $40. You know what I mean? Like they wanted him. They're trying to get him. And you probably have seen the same when you see somebody blow up and somebody puts almost $10 right away. That's my dude. I'm dropping it all. He's going to be mine. So
I think one of the reasons Barry, you know, mentioned how much he liked the $10 and he tried to convince you, you know, and sell you on it.
He did.
Was because last year too, this is almost a completely separate subject, right? Like trades. Mm-hmm. Right, trades and trade deadlines. I don't believe in trade deadlines. I don't give a fuck. Okay, I don't. We can trade whenever. You be in the championship game and you want to fuck over, you know, the guy you're playing, by all means, right? Any form of dynasty, which C2C is, yep. I don't believe in trade deadlines. Okay, I get it. I've heard all the arguments. I reject every single one of them. Okay, every single one of them. If we're playing a long-term fantasy game like this and you want to sell your fucking soul to the devil to try to win a championship, by all means, go for it. I think one of the reasons Barry likes it so much is because when we got down to nut-cutting time last year in the playoffs and you look around and there's Steve's team over here and Steve hasn't paid attention to the college side at all. He don't give a fuck. Like, he hasn't paid attention a lick. And you look over and he's got $10 in fucking pickups left, all $10. And Barry's out there trying to fight his way in the fucking playoffs, right? He's trying to grind his ass off to go get it. He can very easily go to Steve and be like, you ain't going to use these $10, are you? Nah, I don't give a fuck. Here, on the NFL side, you're a little bit more competitive. Or maybe you want this rookie who's not really fucking performing all that well, you know, on the NFL side. He can put that value to it and be like, all right, I'll give you this guy. You give me the $10 on the college side, right? Because Barry understands then that $10, how much it means to him in the playoffs to have that flexibility to add and drop and cut players. So I like it from that aspect, too, when we're not playing with the trade deadline. And we had a shit ton of activity with fab dollars being traded for, you know, whatever. let me get these. I need these with passion, man. I got Mac quarterbacks I need in my lineups like now.
It's crunch time. Now, I totally get that, but I feel like you could do the same thing. I mean, like with the unlimited budget, there's going to be guys that you want. This is the dude to pick up for the week. You know what I mean? He's got a great matchup. He's been balling, and he's still available. You know what I mean? We had guys that I was picking up going into the playoffs, so I could have traded for fab dollars just the same because I'd blown all mine by then pretty much as well. Also, too, there's that strategy of being able to grab these guys early because college is also crazy because like sometimes like just like the NFL, the freshman guys don't play right away. So you have different cycles throughout the college season, just like you would have the NFL season. You have the guys who break out early who are CFF studs sometimes and they have no NFL future, but they're going to looks like they're going to cruise all year long. So you spend a ton of money on them. And then next thing you know, halfway through the season, some freshmen break out. You know what I mean? And people are dropping a ton of fab on them. And then you find guys who have been balling kind of, but they're not on huge programs. So they're kind of under the radar. So they stay on the waiver wire. But here comes championship week. And you're like, dude, I need some guys. I got like, maybe a bye week or something. And now you're trading for fab or you're doing what you got to do to get those guys. Just even on an unlimited waiver, there is always people. There's 132, 36 teams or whatever. There's going to be people available. And then, like you said earlier, too, is we're balancing Devy and what's it called, prospects, like actual production. So you are going to have Devy guys that you're like, people are just won't cut, period. So the people will stay on the waiver wire because you can't cut that Devy guy. They're not scoring any points, but they are taking up roster spots. So there will be people on the waiver wire.
I think our debate just proves there's lots of ways to skin a cat.
So many ways to play.
Which is why when I join C2C leagues, I commish, right? So I'm the king. Okay. Like the old Seinfeld skit with the guy selling couches or whatever. I'm the whiz. Nobody beats me.
Love it. That's awesome. So, next, we'll move on to the next topic since I think we've covered these waivers on
how thing, man.
We differ, but we do agree in a lot of the same concepts. And honestly, however you would like to play, there's no wrong answer. I really prefer that unlimited moving in and out. And Mike prefers a little bit more structure, which there's nothing wrong with either one. So both work.
The important thing is you're playing in a C2C league.
1,000%. Right?
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. Well, actually, one last thing.
Okay.
I'm sorry. One last thing. That saying some of those things reminded me is one other argument, one final argument that I do have for unlimited is I like why we don't play NFL that way. You know what I mean? We play an unlimited budget with NFL. So we don't, the whole fun thing that we enjoy the NFL is being able to grind that waiver. Like Koopa always says, grind that edge. You know what I mean? So you grinding in C2C, I feel like the same exact principle. I enjoy that the most is digging through and finding gems who nobody else wants. So that is my huge thing. That's the most enjoyment I get out of it. C2C. I mean, of course I want to win, but I love finding that dude who was just this random guy in the waiver wire who becomes a hit. And I feel like that unlimited budget allows me a little bit more freedom to do that without a penalty.
Counterpoint.
That was my last final point.
Counterpoint, asshole.
Yeah.
My most enjoyment comes from trading.
Okay. Yeah. See?
I fucking hate the waiver wire. And if I had a choice on the NFL side and nobody would lose their fucking minds, we'd have 70-man rosters on the NFL side with no fucking waivers at all. Okay. Yeah. We'll include the guys in the rookie draft next year, motherfuckers. That's what we're going to do. But you want to make your team better, you want to compete, you need to trade, which is what I like doing. I actually, it's probably because I'm doing 60 fucking leagues, right? But the waivers become an absolute goddamn nightmare, man. It takes me hours. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking just, I'm not doing research. I'm not grinding. You know, I'm not looking at trends. I'm just talking about hours to just go in and put like, $15, fuck, drop this guy, fuck this guy. It sucks. Well, the nice
thing for you this year, Mike, is a lot of this podcast is going to be geared towards, I want to gear it towards that. I'll do the work for you.
Perfect.
We'll be talking about these things, thinking about looking at pickups and looking for the guys on a weekly basis and I would be targeting on picking up or just maybe not targeting, but we will talk about like watch listing people and whatnot. So
yeah,
I'll do a lot of that work for you and we can discuss it together and you can maybe decide to spend that $1.
Just don't ask my opinion, you know, preseason on Caleb Johnson like you did last year where I was like, that was a little wishy-washy. Like, I don't know. I love the kid, but Jesus Christ. Like, what the fuck's going on, man? I was hovering over
the draft button. And what did I do? I asked the Iowa guy. Because, you know, like, who else would you ask? Then the guy lives and breathes Iowa. And I said, hey, that Caleb Johnson guy, what do you think? And I got a and then homie balled out.
Legend. Yeah. Fuck. That hurt. My bad.
It's all good.
At least I kept you away from buying like the weird hype of Addison of Stranga for like I don't.
Yeah.
He's an Iowa tight end, so he's got to be good.
He's not an Iowa tight end. You and I do not consider him Iowa.
He's
a Michigan tight end.
He's whatever.
Well, not of Stranga. Sorry, the other guy.
Who's Eric the Hall.
All is the one I'm thinking of.
Eric Hall wasn't an Iowa tight end.
It drives me up a wall every time everybody says, "Oh, you on NFL Progress, he was Michigan. He was Iowa tight end." No, he wasn't. He ain't Iowa.
Drives me up the wall too when people claim Joe Burrow, like it's an Ohio State championship he won. That's an Ohio State number one over. No, it's not, motherfucker. It's
not, dude. Yeah.
No, it's not. He left that fucking place. Well, he still claims it. He still really likes him. I don't give a fuck. He didn't win it with Ohio State players.
Right.
He won it with fucking Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, man. Come on. Fuck out of here.
All right. Next topic. So next one I think we're going to go over is startups. Plans and you're going to startups. Do you have any like thing that you try to do everything? Do you kind of just let the draft come to you? What's your main strategy going into C2C startup on the college side?
Dude, I really...
Meaning quarterbacks, you know what I mean? Like,
no, I really...
What's your plan?
I really lean on the Campus to Canton guys in the ranks, their draft tool. I lean a lot on that. I would say because college, I'm still trying to figure it out, right? Like, okay. I have a pretty good grasp on how to do an NFL, dynasty startup draft, snake draft. I got a real good fucking grasp on that. College, on the other hand, right, it doesn't really matter which one it is. It's like, fuck, I don't know. I don't even know what the good strategies are. I don't know if this worked, right? The thing is, I haven't had enough successes or failures to really start to mold like a process too. And as I keep getting in more and more leagues and as I keep making more and more leagues, the settings are drastically changing, right? Like we're finding more stuff that we like, right? And like last year was the first one I did with, essentially starting four quarterbacks. You're like, oh, how's that factor into value? It factored into value so much for me as the quarterback guy on the NFL side that Fizz and I had the 101 pick. And I was like, I'm taking this true freshman going to Ohio State just because I heard some shit about him looking like the reincarnation of Julio Jones, and I want that shit for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Worked out okay.
Yes, it did.
We didn't win a championship, but I'm sitting there with Jeremiah Smith on my roster going like, yeah, what up? That was the 101 startup pick. Not a supplemental pick. I took a fucking freshman, an 18-year-old freshman with the 101 because I...
That was pretty ballsy, like, but I mean...
Fuck it, let's go.
I was with you though, so I mean, I probably would have done the same thing.
So I mean, it's like taking the easy way out. I don't really have a fucking plan.
That's not wrong. I mean,
the only plan I would have, I'll say this, is this last one that we did. We did the NFL draft first, and we included college picks, startup picks in the NFL side. We used them as kicker placeholders. So you got all the NFL rookies and vets that you can draft, but if you took a kicker, it correlated. We did the first 36 picks as kicker placeholders. So when Fizz and I did that, and I saw everybody taking, all the Lamar Jacksons and Josh Allens and Jamar Chases and stuff, we took a fucking couple early shots on young guys for the NFL side that we wanted, but nobody was really looking at the college side. So I told Fizz, I said, fuck it, man. Maybe we'll just have like the greatest college pipeline. Fuck the NFL side. We're going to punt this shit. We're going to build our NFL side through just having copious amounts of college picks. So every chance we got, I'm taking a kicker. Give me a college startup pick, which we ended up with, I don't know what the fuck it was, like four first rounders, six second rounders, and like a whole bunch of third round startup picks, right? We had a ridiculous opportunity to win the college side right out the gate. We didn't, right? Like that strategy didn't work out, but I like it because I picked a direction. I picked a side, which I wanted to be good. And it gives people that opportunity where if you don't include something like that, then everybody starts on equal playing field on both sides and nobody really gets to pick a direction. You don't get to really see who the guys are. Man, I feel confident in my college abilities or I feel confident in my NFL abilities or whatever it is. So I think when you talk about doing a startup, it's actually how you implement the startup first will determine your strategy. Because if I'm going to go a shit ton of college picks like we did, then I better have some sort of plan on what we're doing here. And our plan last year for this one was, with all these picks, we want a shit ton of freshmen. We want a shit ton of long-term value. And the only time that we're not going to take a freshman is if it's that fucking sophomore or that junior that we know next year's already getting talked about as a round one NFL draft pick, right? He's already in the mock drafts. Like, he's got to be that close. We don't want to project too far out. We don't want to project this big breakout for him. We want the sure things, or we want to go with this super tantalizing youth of Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams. Shout out Fizz. We did it. We got both of them.
Makes sense. So yeah, my plan usually going in is, like you said, you had a ton of picks in the first three rounds and still lost. So that's the cool thing about college fantasy. It's, you can have some of the top guys, and dude, the small school guys will just blow you out of the water some days. It just happens. So I really prefer focusing on Devy early if I'm in a normal startup. Looking for guys that have NFL potential, because those will run out at least fairly quickly, or in the first few rounds for some guys that are, like, especially with like the draft pool like you talked about and whatnot, those are going to be highlighted with between either the 24/7 or with the Campus Canton rankings. Those guys kind of do run out, but C2C production does not run out, or CFF production does not run out. So I really like to focus Devy early and then move to CFF. That's been my play for the past few years. It seems to work okay. I've been able to compete pretty much every single year while still focusing on maintaining my depth. So that's usually my goals. And when I enter a startup, I'm thinking Devy early, focus, hammer that out, try to hold strong, because sometimes you want to go for the CFF guys and then hit CFF a little bit later.
One of the things I will say too, and I've learned this the hard way over the last couple of years, but I'm going to really try to implement it. I'm a fucking quarterback nut. I love quarterbacks to death in Dynasty, in Superflex leagues. I love them to death. And no matter the fact that this last year was the first one I've done where we started four quarterbacks on the college side, you know, start two quarterbacks, but two Superflex, they're going to be quarterbacks. Try to put an emphasis on people having quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And putting the onus back on them. I go back and I look at that startup draft, and it's just like supplemental drafts. It's just like every other goddamn startup draft I've done. College quarterbacks are one of the riskiest things to project out on how good they're going to be. Okay. I mean, now we're talking Cade Klubnik as, you know, a potential first round pick next year. But just last year before the season, people were like, this dude's a fucking bust.
Yeah,
this dude's a bust. And in startups or supplementals, he was a first round guy, no question. Like, remember next Spencer man Albert? Up. Yeah. Okay. So here's where we're at, right? In our startup last year, four quarterbacks. Nico Imalava was the first quarterback off the board. That one sucks now. Like, you're like, oh, fuck. Next was Carson Beck. Mm-hmm. All right. Then somebody took Arch Manning. You go, all right, fuck, we finally got one. We think. We're pretty sure, okay, but bad shit has happened. But then I took Shedeur Sanders. Fuck. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Jalen Milrow. Jackson Arnold. God damn it. Want, want, want. DJ Lagway. Yeah. They like that pick. Connor Wegman, you know, is a second round pick. Fuck me, man. Jackson Dart turned out all right. Moore remains to be seen. Dylan Raiola. Lenore Sellers looks like a really good pick. You know, but like last year's 101. Cam Ward was in the fourth round of this startup. You know what I mean? I really think
did Cam Ward even get drafted when he started college? Like, no. Incarnate Ward?
No. Like, he wasn't even in the player pool.
He wasn't even in the pool.
But this is what I'm saying, like, with these quarterbacks, I'm starting to learn the hard way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, especially in the first couple of rounds. Like, I don't think I'm taking quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't. I think it's the superstar wide receivers. It's those young, can't-miss running backs. Now, running backs historically, too, like the number one running back recruit, if you want to go back and look like the last 10 years, you're going to be like, who the fuck was this guy? Yeah. like, who the hell was this guy? So even that is kind of a sketchy thing. It's going to be sketchy with any freshman or any of these young players, But it really feels like the quarterbacks, you can have the biggest swings and misses because you're going to spend premium draft capital on it. Even guys like, you know, who took Evan Stewart, you know, we took Evan Stewart 105, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't have the greatest year last year, now hurt out this year. Still, would I rather have an Evan Stewart on my roster or Connor Wegman at this fucking point? And the answer is going to be Evan Stewart. No question. No question. You could see a path to rebound for him. There's not a lot of outs on Connor Wegman at this point. Like, that's just burnt money.
Well, also, too, it is tough with wide receivers and quarterbacks. They can accelerate to the moon, and they can create it real fast. The one safer bet is running back. Running back can do jack shit for like 2 years and then have a baller season and be a huge draft pick. So you're a lot safer. If you are year 1-0 as a wide receiver, it is almost a death sentence. So you can be a 5-star wide receiver and have a end up year 1-0 and no one's trading you anything for them. I don't know if we've obviously it's our first podcast. We haven't really talked about year 1-0s, but Campus to Canton, they preach the year 1-0. Basically, there's a bunch of different little minor metrics statistics that you need to hit in order to pass the year 1-0, and that's their theory. Idea behind it, that if you are good enough to get on the field and hit these minor metrics or statistics, then you have a significantly stronger chance to become an NFL productive wide receiver.
Yeah.
So, and that doesn't, I mean, that includes injury as well. I mean, even if you miss the season from injury, you are considered a year 1-0 period. You are missing valuable developmental time being on the field as a college player. And it really hurts your chances to be an NFL star.
Which is crazy too. When you think about it too, like we understand these are 17 or 18 year old freshmen coming in, and with the way COVID rules are, and you know, transfers and NCAA eligibility,
we're getting almost rid of the COVID so far.
I mean, some of these 17 year olds are playing against 24 year old men on Saturday. I mean, 24 year old, like, think about when you were that age at, you know, 17, how your body's developed versus somebody who's in their fucking mid-20s, for Christ's sakes, right?
Yeah. And not just that old, but like they've been four, five, 6 years in a college weight room.
Yeah.
So it's not only you've developed, just developed naturally, but you are now developed from a college program weight room.
But you look at that still, like playing against grown ass men. And then you see a 17, 18 year old like Jeremiah Smith or Ryan Williams come in and fucking flat out embarrass these people, like embarrass them. And you think back to how many breakout true freshman seasons that we have had, you know, dynamite, right? I'm old enough to remember when Sammy Watkins came on the scene, like very first fucking game. And you're like, who the fuck is this freshman that just looks like the fastest dude out there, the best athlete? Like, this is a freshman dominating. We've seen enough of these guys come in where if you're actual year 1-0, right, which is a very tiny metric that you have to hit just to not be considered it. Mm-hmm. It's like, you were pretty fucking piss poor, man. Like, you were.
You were so bad you couldn't get on the field that minimum amount of time to do.
Just you couldn't get any air run.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But also, too, a lot of guys do it, and that craters their value. So, yeah, I mean, you are really risking it with a what's it called? A wide receiver pick and quarterback picks, man. They are scary times when you are picking one of those two.
I don't know. I mean, Jesus, I got enough here in this draft. The running backs do generally look mostly safe. You're going to have misses all over the place. But the first running back off the board, Ollie Gordon last year, I don't think anybody expected the decline that he had. And then obviously, you know, we hope in the NFL, like, he bounces back and we're kind of excited now for, you know.
But even to like the freshmen, like, they can do literally nothing for multiple years, and it's okay. It's not a death sentence. Like, it's not great. Obviously, you want your guy performing and breaking out and being a star.
Next three drafted, you know, Judkins, Henderson, Genty, all turned out all right, you know.
Right.
Justice Haynes, probably want that one back. Nick Singleton looks pretty good. Marion Hampton, good. Cedric Baxter, RIP with the ACL. That sucked. Like, I fucked that one up. Caleb Jackson, another one of my fuck-ups. Yeah. Thought he was going to be something. Devin Neal was okay. Mm-hmm. So it does look like running back's kind of the safer one, which, you know, it's something you got to train yourself to, because if you go do a dynasty startup right now, how many people are that excited to take running backs in the first two rounds, right? There's a couple, but after that, you're like, Achane in the second? Nah, I'm good, man. Fuck that shit. Yeah. I don't want that.
Well, you got to take those shots. And the value swings. It's so worth it if you hit on that quarterback and whatnot. But it's definitely a little bit risky business. And then it's you got to clinch a little bit when you're making that selection. So
I think we can all agree, though, in C2C, both of us, we can agree. Mm-hmm. Tight ends really don't fucking matter.
Oh, no. Nah. I mean, not, dude, I...
We don't give a flying fuck.
Zero. We did a 60-round draft. I think I have two tight ends on my roster, and we start two. And that's it. And I will be filling them out with the waiver wire.
Outside of Tyler Warren last year or Brock Bowers the year before, tight end production generally, even from Mac, who gives a fuck? Mm-hmm. You know, Harold Fannin, I guess, gets included in that because he had a dynamite year.
Yeah.
But generally, tight end production is like, there's like maybe three dudes or four dudes total throughout college football that are producing at the tight end position. Everybody else is like 10 points a game, and you can find them wherever the fuck you want. Like they're on clearance.
Tyler Warren and Terrence Ferguson had them both on one of my rosters. Guess who did not draft either one of them?
Waivers.
I just looked in at guys who were doing okay and making receptions. That's it. So I said, screw it. Picking this dude up. So, I mean, again, tight end we don't care about. You can easily find a guy off waivers.
Well, Tyler Warren is a prime example, right? Like everybody was fawning over Theo Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
When Tyler Warren finally started to emerge, right? And that was my biggest knock on Theo Johnson last year when he came out. It was like, you were supposed to be all this. You tested like a god. You had the reins at Penn State, and then you gave him up to something called the Tyler Warren. I don't even know what the fuck a Tyler Warren is.
Right.
Like he looks like this big lumbering goofball out there, but he's playing over you and putting up stats. He's so, fine. Yeah, Tyler Warren was picked up off of waivers for a lot of people and was free fucking found money.
Yeah. Who else did I have? Oh, it was a Royer, the Cincinnati tight end, who was pretty decent last year, picked him up off waivers. Like you can get dudes easily and that become a thing just off waivers. So yeah, don't even care about them.
No. Terrence Ferguson was an 18th round pick in that shit C2C 2.0 startup last year. 18th round pick. No one gave a fuck.
No one cares.
No one cares at all.
I mean, usually I play two tight ends too. So, I mean, they do matter, and you'll find somebody somewhere. And then you might even get a hit. They might even become an NFL player.
Hey, the best tight end Fizz and I had on our roster last year, Elijah Arroyo. We drafted him in the 42nd round.
Exactly.
Like, who cares?
I think I had him off waivers and then dropped him last year. So somebody else got him.
I've had him on a few C2C teams over his career that have been, I was excited to draft him and then I dropped him. And then it was like, I'm going to go back to the well one more time, right? This will be the year. Finally, I was right.
I was not. He's not on my roster anymore. I cut him. And so that was fun.
R.I.P.
Yeah. Oh, well. Oh, well.
You just need to get some Rocky beers in your life.
Right. That is a legendary name.
I think we did, fuck, man. We're an hour in. First episode.
One last thing, actually two more things I want to talk about real quick. Where is it? Devy traits. Like, when we are picking these running backs and wide receivers, are there stuff you're kind of looking for in these drafts for these guys? Is there anything like, I want them to be over 200 pounds. I will not draft any running back over under 200 pounds. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's something I kind of keep in the back of my mind, but like anything like that for the wide receivers or running backs?
Height, well, we've really shifted the goalposts on the NFL too, right? Like guys like Bucky Irving, Kyren Williams, you know, Achane, you know, like Jaden Blue maybe this year. There's going to be the wave of NFL actually utilizing undersized running backs now has kind of changed. If you asked me 2 years ago, I was still very much on the like, dude, I'm a size speed freak at the NFL wise. I think it's kind of similar to how you kind of saw this shift from these true alpha X wide receivers in the NFL probably about 5 or 6 years ago. And there was a lot more Devontae Smith types, Tyler Lockett types. commanding giant fucking target shares and putting up fantasy points.
Kind of changed the game too.
He's one right. I think the running back's becoming kind of the same thing. Now, granted, if you're, you know, Tez Johnson, if you're, you know, like one of these guys, I'm drafting you for college production. That's it. Like, I'm not going to push up any type of Devy value on it too. So if I'm looking at Devy guys, unless you're, you know, 155 pound, you know, 5'9" wide receiver, right? If you're just even kind of 5'10", 175, okay. Like I'm going to treat you the same. Like your outlook is probably the same. Your NFL path is the same. Running back's going to be the same thing, unless you look like Deuce Vaughn. Like I'm going to be interested in you. But okay. I think one of the biggest things and kind of one of the ones that's been most exploited and Campus Canton guys are talking about it too is athleticism, right? They have ways of measuring athleticism. Now we don't have a, you know, true freshman combine per se, but we have enough camps and enough, you know, they have enough of these events that go on where we can get some pretty good athletic measurables on these players as they come into college. So those guys who are standing out athletically, it's kind of like anything else, man. Like, yes, can you have a not very very athletic Kyren Williams succeed in the NFL? Yeah. But for the most part, if you go look at some of the best running backs in the NFL, they're all athletic freaks. Same thing with wide receivers, right? Chase is fast as fuck. Definitely for tight ends. Raz is so fucking important for tight ends.
Yeah, it's like the only thing I care about.
So I'm gonna lean to the size speed freaks, right? While I'm still disappointed that Nick Harbor hasn't broken out yet, listen, if he ever puts it together at 6'5", 230 with Olympic track speed, fucking here we go. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm gonna shift there. But if I got to pick between the two, I'm only talking like, listen, I got two equal prospects. I think they're about the same. And one of them's a 5'10 wide receiver who weighs 170 pounds, who, you know, they project at like a 4'5 or a 4'6 40. And then I'm looking at Nick Harbor, who's 6'5, 230. I'm still a size speed. Like, fuck me. Like, let's go, man. I want to.
It's hard. It's real, real hard.
I'm going with the freak of nature. Yeah. Right. Because the freak of natures generally work out and make their way to the NFL a little bit more consistently.
So, I mean, I'm pretty much in agreement with all that. The main things, like with running back, I really don't like going underneath like 190 pounds. That just starts terrifying me. You're going to have your outliers for sure, obviously, and I'm willing to take my shots, especially if I'm debating looking more at CFF value and understanding that maybe I'm taking the shot that he might only be a CFF asset, but for if I'm looking my Devy, my NFL stuff, I'm probably looking at least 190. I'm hoping, praying for at least.
Right.
And then, that's kind of like what I'm looking for my running backs and my wide receivers. Bro, I've been burned so many times with these 5'9 guys and below. Like, I'm so over it. You got to be like 5'10 or I don't want to talk to you. I'm not even looking your way no more.
I get you.
Anything above 5'10 and I'm happy. 5'9 just scares the crap out of me.
It makes it tough too because college teams are historically notorious for inflating numbers. Remember when Rashad Bateman was 6'3 and 215, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden then we get to the fucking combine. It's like the dude measures it's 6 foot on the nuts, like barely cracks 6 foot, and he's 190 pounds. 5'9
on the college website, man. Nope.
Yeah, if they list you at 5'9, it's like a Desmond Reed for Pittsburgh. Like they list him at 5'9, and then you go look at him.
5'6, 5'7.
The motherfucker looks 5'6 at about 150 pounds. Like they list him 5'9, like 180, and I'm like, no.
No.
It's.
Was it Huge A6'5 too, or something like that at one point?
Yeah.
Yeah,
they do this shit all the time, man.
All the time. So
Savion Williams was, you know, 6'4 and 230, and
right,
it's like, oh no, he's actually only 6'2 and like 215. You know, like this is, it's bullshit, man. It's
that stuff scares me. So when you're going a little bit too small, I really try to. I mean, if I'm looking at you in a CFF value, like then that's fine. But for your Devy, like for if I really want to consider you a Devy asset, I'm probably cutting you out of that mindset. That's what I look at for my Debbie players when I'm looking early in those drafts.
Same thing. And then with tight ends, I give zero shits about them, yeah, other than if you're not an athlete, mm-hmm, I don't fucking, I'm not
only
interested.
Thing I care about. Only
I'm either looking at you for super cheap production, right? Mm-hmm. Or if I'm looking at you for any aspect of NFL future, you better be a fucking athlete. You 100%. Better be. You better be a freak.
Yep. You better be on that freak list. So then you brought up my next topic, which was the athletic tools. So we have, like, nowadays a ton of these mile per hour trackers and all that stuff. And those things are fantastic to give you an idea of where people are. My main thing is be careful with those, because I don't think they're always perfect. They do get things a little bit wrong. And then I don't know if you saw some of the tweets around the combine time. One of the tracker peoples posted out how they did versus, like, what they actually chimed out what's called 40 times. Wasn't that great? And they quickly deleted the tweet. Like, the tweet disappeared. I think they were getting roasted because it wasn't that great. So again, they're good, and it gives you an idea of where these people are, but I would be careful that the end all be all that this guy really hit 22 miles per hour. It can be wrong, you know what I mean? Or it can be a little bit off, but a little bit off could be a lot, you know what I mean? Yeah. So just be careful with those. They leave room for error on them. And also, too, is when they come out with these player metrics and whatnot, like, I mean, yes, these guys are amazing digging through and finding verified weights and lifts and whatever, but players can improve. You know what I mean? Like, you got this idea of what they are as a prospect, but you need to be willing to accept the fact that they've gotten better. You know what I mean? You know, they just look better. Maybe they're just a better football player, and then you put the pads on and they just run faster. You know what I mean? We've seen guys do it where, what's his name? Golden. We did not think he could run a 4.2, 4.29 or whatever he ran. And next, like, for some reason, he ran faster than he did on tape. And then sometimes it's the opposite. So sometimes they're faster in pads than they are just right off track. So I mean, you just got to kind of take some of the stuff with a grain of salt, being like, yes, that gives me an idea, but I'd be careful being like, oh yeah, this tool says this guy's more athletic than this guy. Cool. That gives me an idea, but if I'm watching the football field, this dude's taking off and breaking away from everybody, maybe it's time to adjust. You know what I mean?
You've been fooled before. Yeah. Like, it's happened, and it's happened over decades. It has, because once upon a time, you couldn't convince me that DeAnthony Thomas of Oregon wasn't the fastest fucking man alive.
Right.
That run he had in the Rose Bowl versus Wisconsin, and the fucking seas just part and he is gone. And you're like, that's a 4.2 dude if I've ever seen one. And then you get to the combine and it's like, it may be 4.4.
Right. Or Tyreek. I mean, like, he didn't run combine, did he?
No, he wasn't invited.
He had pro day, but it wasn't like the fastest time ever. That dude is probably the fastest person that we've ever seen, like, straight up on a football field. Yeah. Nobody can ever touch that dude. So, I mean,
it's nuts. So I'll say this too. And then you said the GPS tracking that they have, you know, the miles per hour data, you see good stuff that comes out of it, but it's still relatively new too, where you're like, how did you get the data? Who measured this? You know, like, where did it come from? And then you see enough of those things, enough of those reports, like, so-and-so hit 25 miles an hour in practice. And you're like, the NFL's got GPS, like, locators in player fucking pads, right? Like, for their data. Yeah. And Tyreek Hill hit 22 miles an hour, like 22.3, and that's the fastest fucking man we've seen on a football field, to your point.
Yeah.
I don't believe your 25 mile an hour.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, the fastest NFL player is Tyreek, and he's only doing 22.3. You know what I mean? I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
And then you see, like, one of these athletic things, and that guy's hit 22.7, and you're like,
I don't think so.
Is he fast as fuck? Yes. Is that great information? Yes. Is it completely accurate? Probably not.
I think it's like all tools, as it goes on and gets more advanced, it'll be a lot more reliable and a lot more consistent, and you'll be able to trace, like, how that data got collected and where it came from, and trust it a little bit more. But you use it as a tool, but
the run of their life. They had that one day. They ran the fastest they've ever run, and they will never run that again.
Take it with a grain of salt. You know, take it with a grain of salt. 100%. Like, and to your point too, like, we don't understand with a lot of these players that they are, you know, they're teenagers. They're 17, 18, 19, 20. a lot of people are still developing until they're like 23 or 24 physically, right? Yeah. And you've seen wild transformations. It's not football related, but think about Anthony Davis in basketball, you know? Sophomore year, that's a 6'3 point guard that nobody gives a shit about. Right. Comes back his senior year, it's a 7-foot, super highly mobile, you know, with fucking guard skills, ball handling, like center / power forward. And you're like, what the fuck? This Who dude grew 9 inches? Yeah. Like, yeah, son of happened? A bitch. Yeah, what happened? Yeah. Yeah. The same thing. Like, if we did this podcast this time last year, and then you look at me this year, you're like, what happened to
Mike? Who's that guy?
What happened to the old Mike?
Somebody stole my friend.
Yeah, I'm not developing anymore. I'm just losing. That's what it is. But it's the opposite end of the spectrum. I mean, we've all been teenagers at one point. You might be a teenager now. Listen to it. Your body's going to change. It's going to change, man. Mm-hmm. It's going to develop. They're going to get more muscle mass. They're going to get faster. Justin Jefferson could barely run a 4.7 when he was a fucking freshman at LSU. Goes out to the combine and we're like, oh shit, we didn't know Justin Jefferson was a 4.4 guy. That motherfucker can actually fly.
You can move.
It happens.
And being able to adjust for that change, or willing to let our mind open to that, that could change.
Yeah.
We need to be aware of that.
And it can change for the worse too. I mean, football's a rough game, right? People take some nasty fucking hits. Your thighs get beat up. Your knees get fucked up. Your feet get fucked up. Your ankles get fucked up. That 17-year-old who came in who was blazing, you know, by the time he gets 4 years of college football under his fucking belt, by the time he comes out, you're like, wow, he seemed so much faster a couple of years ago. Yeah. Fighter's taking a lot of car collisions, you know, every goddamn tackle in the SECs, like, you know, a fucking 3-car pileup. Like,
it's going to fuck with you after 5 pounds didn't work out too well.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I feel bad for Tez Johnson the first time he gets whacked, man.
Oh, man. That's got to hurt. All right. Oh, man. All right, very final topic, and then we'll get out of here, is favorite programs besides Iowa, obviously. Ooh. Do you have any programs that you love that you tried to target? Obviously, we got Ohio State for our wide receivers, LSU for wide receivers. Is there any other things that you like besides that you like to target at all or love?
There's good systems, right? Like, it's just like the NFL. There's good coaches, right? If this is why I'm high on JJ McCarthy on the NFL side, right? Because Kevin O'Connell and that system he has with Justin Jefferson and TJ Hawkins, and that's fucking amazing. That's a perfect spot for a quarterback to be. You can't name me 5 better than that, right? It's top tier. Same kind of thing goes for college. Right?
Yep.
You can do some research and you can find some good gems, right? You're going to want a quarterback that's playing at USC, right? You're going to want somebody playing in that system. The track record of them developing a quarterback is pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. Same kind of thing we talk about when we did film sessions. Listen, I don't know if Jackson Dart's going to be good in the NFL. You, as a Giants fan, got to be impressed with what he's done so far. He's looked good. Yeah,
he's looked way better than I expected.
But at the college level, the scheme that Lane Kiffin runs down there in Ole Miss is a little bit gimmicky, and we don't know how it translates to the NFL level. But for college purposes, I know the quarterback at Ole Miss is going to put up fucking fantasy points, right? They're going to have a wide-open offense that's going to put some stuff up. Now, there's other schemes, you know, in the MAC, you know, North Texas, you know, UNLV runs a weird fucking thing that's going to put up fucking fantasy points. So you can find those. But if you're trying to blend, like, developmental, get to the NFL, listen, whoever the quarterback is at Ole Miss under Lane Kiffin, Georgia running backs, right? Yeah. Even though they're going to, for college fantasy purposes, kind of suck because they're going to be in a timeshare for the most part, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to split 3-headed, 4-headed monster. I'll say there's one specific ones that you can target. You really can. Like you said, LSU fucking wide receivers, Ohio State wide receivers, a quarterback playing under Steve Sarkisian is going to, even though we both think Quinn Ewers sucks, he had an affinity for him. Sark is going to get the most out of his quarterbacks. He's done it everywhere that he's gone.
Yeah.
I think there's specific ones that you can target. Iowa tight ends, obviously. Yeah. Right.
Obviously.
Right. Except Addison Ostrang.
You've been pretty good.
Penn State, if you want some ridiculous athletes. Like, every tight end that comes out of Penn State is like a fucking RAS freak, apparently. Except Tyler Warren, because he declined to like work out and do anything. So I think he might actually suck as an athlete. I'm just kidding. But yeah, there's certain ones you can target. I'll say a lot of it too, like just my fandom comes into play.
That's fair.
Right? I'm not going to overdraft Iowa guys. But listen, like this year, if Kamari Moulton's staring at me in the seventh round or eighth round of a startup, I'm pushing the button. Fuck it, man. I want some Kamari Moulton, you know? And like, I got some Gronowski this year. Like, this is going to be the quarterback that's going to save us just because I want to fuck around and find out.
I forgot to tell you the story. I went to draft him, and I must have typed his name in wrong because he didn't pop up. And I was like, oh, man, somebody already grabbed him. And I was kind of busy, so I didn't really investigate it too much. So I drafted somebody else. And, like, a couple picks later, Barry grabs him. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, I got Barry.
I'm trying to draft him for my boy. And I was going to talk to you about him all year. But now,
well, it's good for Barry because
I missed out.
I sniped Barry in our league, our C2C league. He DM'd me right afterwards. You son of a bitch. I was like, I'm going to. I got to have some Gronowski, right? I got to have some hope. But yeah, like fandom for Iowa. When I was a younger kid, man, I grew up loving Florida State. This is why Fizz and I rock together quite a bit. Loving Florida State, Bobby Bowden and Peter Warwick and shitty ass Chris Wakey. You know, he was like 97, you know, winning a Heisman. But like Florida State, I always kind of follow the program, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not like a great, I got Florida State shit here. It's just, I'm an Iowa guy through and through, but I got other programs. We just talked about, there's 136 or whatever the fuck it is. Like you can like a few programs, right? And there's some that I fucking hate that I try to put my fantasy bias, you know, away and draft good players for my team. But there's teams I just don't fucking, there's head coaches I don't like fucking Michigan guys, like fuck them. I don't.
I live in Ohio. So yeah.
Like as good as, you know, Bryce Underwood may be, like, I'm still like, Michigan. I don't really fucking want a Michigan guy. In Nebraska for me, Iowa State. That's why taking Abu Sama in the fourth, I was like, I feel like I'm breaking barriers here. And then he fucked me. So
Right back.
Fuck him. Not touching these Iowa State players. Get the fuck out of here. So, yeah, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. But if you do take the time and look at some schemes, like, there's ones that are going to be more beneficial to it, right? Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Like you're going to want some exposure to TCU wide receivers, even though maybe they haven't panned out so well on the NFL side. NFL, but you know,
there's always one that's doing something. So
there's always one fucking balling out at the college level for sure, man. For sure. Playing in that Big 12 is a godsend sometimes.
Yeah. What's defense? I mean,
no, they don't even exist. They don't give a shit.
Doesn't exist. Awesome. Well, I ran out of topics, I believe, so I think we are good to wrap this bad boy up. Mike, it's been awesome talking to you, and I'm glad we finally got to do this. And can you believe we are almost pretty much ready about to start the season for college? That's insane.
Saturday. Speaking of Iowa State.
Was it this week zero this week?
Yep. Iowa State, noon for you East Coasters, 11 for us. First game, like first meaningful college football game already. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're insane. Playing in Ireland.
I think so. I think that's that's crazy.
It's already here, man. It's a good matchup, man. Iowa State's what, 22? Kansas State is 17. You know, you got a conference matchup right off the fucking
rip for
week zero. And then inevitably, kind of dependent, I got to work, which sucks. Like, it really sucks that it's here. But depending on what time I get home, maybe I might catch some Sam Houston, Western Kentucky, or Stanford, Hawaii, you know, later that night.
Awesome. All right, cool. Well, we'll wrap this one up. And then next episode, we'll have college to talk about, which is kind of crazy.
It is. And next episode, we're going to have college to talk about. We'll already have a few games in the books for week zero. But man, you want to talk about starting the fucking college football season off with a bang? Labor Day weekend, no NFL, right? That's NFL's break between the last preseason game and the official start. It's all college Labor Day weekend. Yeah. I mean, we're talking Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, college football takes center stage.
Yeah.
And it's very fucking rare, Dan. It's very fucking rare that you get a, like, top rank versus top rank fucking matchup right out the gate. No warm up. Texas at Ohio State, 1-3. Holy shit balls. Like, this is gonna be, that's, You want to talk about kicking the college season off?
We're going to be texting each other. It's going to be
nuts. I hope Jeremiah Smith goes for like 350 and four touchdowns.
Dude, it's good. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go, boy.
There'll be a lot of stuff being said.
I'm fired up, man. College football is almost back, right? I spent the last goddamn month just playing college football 26, building dynasties. I got this weird thing when I do it too. Like I'll play a dynasty for like 3 years and then like, I don't know, my ADHD kicks in and then I'm like, I want to go try South Carolina with Lenore Sellers and, you know, Nick Harbor. And then I want to go try playing with this team or whatever. But eventually we're going to lock in, man. We're going to take Iowa to a national championship. It's going to happen.
That wasn't first. Wow. That would have been my guess. I'm not going to lie.
I'm so bitter, man. Last year I tried and Cade McNamara just like fucked me so hard. I just ruined it.
Although I saw like a clip of your boy Gron or whatever throwing like a decent pass. And I was like, whoa, Iowa hasn't seen like a 5 yard pass in how long? I mean, this might be something.
There was over 2 million views on a 5 yard out route. That's how down bad we are as Hawkeye.
I love it.
2 million views on a 5 yard out. Because normally that's a 3 yard out that's also incomplete.
Incomplete, yeah, exactly. 2 million views is wild.
Yeah.
You're like, we haven't seen this in decades. So, I'm excited for you guys. I'm excited.
Yes, sir.
So, all right, man. It was a pleasure talking to you as always. And I can't wait to do the next episode, man, and talk more of actual in-season content. Woo!
Let's go. First episode, not the last, though. We'll be back.
Thank you, everyone, for sticking around, and we'll talk to you guys all soon.
See ya.
Peace.